As a business owner, have you ever wondered about what's going on in the inside of an investor's mind? You know, someone that buys businesses, invests in startups, someone that's putting their hard-earned capital in someone else. Well, in today's episode, I'm having that conversation. We're going to explore what they actually think about when they meet with founders, when they're exploring ideas. We're going to talk about what it really takes and what the investor's looking for. We're also going to be exploring this concept of influencer marketing and what influencers do to really stand apart. And we'll see if influencer marketing actually makes sense for your product. And we dive into some of the things around crowdfunding and if that's an actual viable solution to getting funding for your business. So if you've ever thought about talking with investors, taking on capital, crowdfunding your idea, or maybe growing your business through influencer marketing, this is an episode you're going to want to listen to. We're going to give you the real conversation. There's no product hype. There's nothing to sell. This is just us trying to share something that's real. So let's jump into it. Hey, Spencer, and today I have Scott Paul and Austin Emery with me. We'll start talking about business and the role that Scott has played in investing in businesses, and then we'll also pass the microphone over to Austin, and you can talk about maybe how you've seen influencers working with businesses or some of that magic that really makes someone excited and attracted to work with the business. So I'm going to pass the mic over to Scott and first ask, what is it that when you're deciding with your fund or yourself to invest in someone or in a business, what is it that makes you decide to go for it?
All righty. Well, it's an evolution of learning. And so out of about 25 angel investments, I would say that only five of them are really going to break even, possibly only one or two even seeing return. So that decision is always, is this the one that can at least break even for me? Because otherwise, just put money in real estate or put money in, you know, somewhere else where you're going to probably get your return, your money back. And when I first started angel investing, I would say that the decision was based mostly on the friendship and the knowledge of the person. Like, do I trust the person? And less about the idea, which is actually what you're supposed to do. Most of the you know, knowledge and science out there says go with the team and don't worry about the idea. But the problem was my knowledge of my network at the time, the teams weren't that strong. I'm investing in people that I knew that were, you know, working for me at one of my companies and had an idea and stuff. And that's not really, they didn't have a great track record. This was their first attempt to do something, and That's not the best team you're looking to invest in. As I started, though, kind of creating this entity called Hyperactive Capital, more and more people found out about it and started pitching. And I started learning, you know, how to evaluate the decks a little bit better and the ideas and the teams. And then as I placed bets, time went on and I started to see how they did. You know, what does it look like 2 years after you give someone money? What do you want out of an entrepreneur that makes you feel like they're making headway and stuff like that? And so the ones that are communicative and would report on it and would tell me their successes in a monthly email, these are the ones that I was more comfortable giving more money to, or that I would evangelize to other investors and get behind their product. And so out of those 25, I would say only really five of those, you know, kind of hit that were good investments. And now today, when I look at something, it's very different. I look at people who are have multiple backers that have, you know, sold their idea to many people. So I'm not the only one taking a chance on them. I want that team to be people who have done something in the past, having a prior success. You know, this isn't, if I'm going to bet on someone and it's their first thing, I'm going to have to take a lot of that company. And that's not really good for them. It's not good for me. I don't have time to be a majority owner or of a company. So I want people who don't really need me a lot, but could use me. and but have a team strong enough to kind of carry their own weight and have experience and done it before. So that's kind of the evolution of my angel investing from, you know, 2.5 years ago till today, if that makes sense.
So when you're talking about investing in a person, do you ever, you know, look at when a person has a track record? Does that mean internal track record? Maybe they worked in a company as one of a founding members, or does that mean they had to be a founder of another company?
Yeah, I would like if they have founded a company, because it's, there's just so much muscle memory there from having to deal with, you know, no lifeline, no, not having the comfortable job at an existing company. And so knowing kind of what to do and how to use investor money, and just that stress that comes with that, it's very new. It's not something you can get or feel when you're working at a, you know, as a top performer at a company. However, those are definitely awesome people to look for, those very driven internal, you call them entrepreneurs internally in your company, that are just go above the and are not performing to, you know, get a raise, but performing because they almost feel like they own the company with you. And I've had some of those who feel ownership in the company, and those are people you want to spot out and give a chance if you can find them.
The next part of our story is what you should do in that meeting. I mean, what does it look like when you're sitting across the table from an angel investor, someone that's looking to put money into your business? We're going to talk about what that feels like and what you should expect. Now, when it comes down to you actually finding someone that you feel the idea is good, the person's good, you have a meeting. What does that first meeting look and feel like? Can you kind of tell me that story or give me an example?
Yeah. Well, I'm really excited. I get really excited as an individual as far as like ideas. So I love the sharing of an idea is really energetic to me. So usually meeting me for the first time, I get excited. I feel like you're one of a kind. And I'm not even faking that. I actually get really excited about ideas. It's kind of what feeds me. So, you know, I think there's a lot of a good mind share that comes back and forth, and they feel also, you know, excited in the fact that I'm sharing good war stories of like, oh yes, you could do this, or this is what I saw with this one, or here's a group you should look at. But a lot of times, especially with apps, when people are pitching apps, I'm going to be the first to say, this journey, you probably shouldn't do it. And if you don't understand these things and the likelihood of it be succeeding, but you should do it in that you'll learn, and that it's going to be cheaper than a, you know, MBA or a, you know, expensive, you know, some other type of courses. Like you can learn so much by attempting your idea that it's not going to look anything like what you think it is in your head right now. It's probably not going to work, but you'll, through the process, you'll probably find something else. And luckily today it's, you know, the economy is really well, doing really well. And your chances of stumbling upon something that customers want is pretty likely. You know, I wouldn't say it's still 1 in 10, but it's more likely than, you know, if the economy was suffering. And so I'd say just attempt it, jump off that cliff. I'm a cliff whisperer, so I'm like, jump off the cliff, and then people jump off the cliff. And but I'd let them know that you're probably going to die, and but the survival is worth it. If you don't die, jump off that cliff.
Okay. And so maybe even because you fail, you develop the muscle and the experience for the next go around, or it connects you with someone else.
Those two things. Absolutely. You're going to learn that failure is not the worst thing in the world. You are going to also either connect with someone, or you are going to discover a real problem, which is never really the problem you start off to solve, but you're going to go around that. And Austin knows this well, with a company called Voto, that was an app that I started with Nikhil. We ended up finding out that it wasn't the app people wanted. It was the way we were marketing the app through these social influencers on Instagram that became the business model. So we abandoned this app that we'd spent $250,000 on and started an influencer company that eventually is where I met Austin, and then was sold to Disney for probably much better than I would have ever done with the app. So it was just being able to listen and not be so anchored on the fact that I have to make an app, and realize that like, if something's working and people are willing to pay me for something, we should try something different and move towards that. So that's why I tell, you know, go build an app. It just probably won't be an app that you'll end up selling.
Up next, we're going to be talking with Austin about influencer marketing. Now, influencer marketing is the hot thing that everyone's talking about. And both Scott and Austin have been involved with influencer marketing for several years. What we're going to get to the bottom of is the magic that happens in influencer marketing. And we're going to be talking about how it actually works and why it may have already passed those glory days. Why the days of getting an influencer to hold your product and get massive downloads for your app or your product may be gone. But we're also going to talk about the opportunities and where things can actually open up and happen for you. So I want to pass the mic over to Austin, and you know, we're going to take the conversation and shift it a tiny bit. So Scott's talked about when he's investing in someone, one, he's looking at a track record, looking at the idea, looking at what they've done, and then understanding where they start and where they expect to end probably isn't going to be there. You come from a different background of working with influencers, and there's probably some magic behind the scene that you notice, some similarities. So let's talk about what that influencer magic is, and then what you see when these influencers or people are able to actually turn that into a business. Like, what is that stuff that you see that we don't because you're in it all day?
Yeah, I've been working with influencers now for probably 4 years, which in this industry is a lifetime in the influencer marketing world. And, you know, I think the industry has evolved so much from initially everyone just looks at it as a, you know, it's almost like a paid media buy where you just buy into it and you're just looking for likes and comments. And the more of those you get, that's kind of your ROI. And for a long time, that's all people were looking for. They weren't the quality of the the advertisements and the way these influencers were marketing hadn't really evolved yet. And so everyone was still doing the, you still see some of this to this day. You go on Instagram, you'll see someone holding up flat tummy tea, you know, and looking at the camera and showing the product. And I think the influencers that really have figured it out and really do well are the ones that have learned that, you know, that they're not fooling their audience. They really understand their audience. They know how they respond to things. They understand when they're being sold to. And others, the really good ones have learned how to incorporate products in a way that they tell a story with the brand or with the product or the service. Sean Duris is a great example of this. I love listening to him talk because, you know, if we had Windex come to us and we wanted him to promote Windex, well, that doesn't really fit necessarily with his brand, but he's going to find a cool way to market it. He'll get his buddies together and they'll have super soaker fights with Windex. And then, you know, he'll make a game out of it or tell a story with it. And he'll find a way to sell it. He does an amazing job with that. So I think the influencers that really understand what they're doing and understand how to market in this day, as the whole industry has evolved, are the ones that really, and the ones that we look to at the company I'm at now, are ones that are going to really organically put the product into their videos or their captions or whatever it is in a way that seems really authentic to their audience, because consumers are very smart nowadays. Especially, you know, the consumer behavior market has, at least on social, has evolved and matured so much over the last few years. So no, gone are the days when you can spend, you know, put a little money on, to get some influence to shout out an app and it shoots up to the top 100, you know, apps in the world because everyone's just like, oh, this person loves this app. No, you know, there's so much,
good old days.
Yeah. Yes. For us, those were definitely the good old days. But consumers are much smarter now. They understand when they're being sold to, especially by influencers. If it's a bad ad, they'll call them out and, not in a nice way. And, so advertisers nowadays have to be even smarter about how we're finding these talent. Do you say have the magic, and making sure that, you know, we're connecting with influencers that have already made that very significant connection with their audience in a way that we know that if we're advertising through them, that their audience is going to trust them. that their audience is going to actually have an affinity in, you know, at the end of the day for us, hopefully drive sales or drive, you know, awareness or at least cause some kind of action on the consumer part.
Coming up, we're going to talk about crowdfunding and if it's an actual viable option for your business. Now, we have Indiegogo and Kickstarter and Patreon, and you can name it. Mainly those two big players of Indiegogo and Kickstarter. And we're going to see if it actually makes sense to jump into that world. And as a side note from this conversation, there is a lot of challenges to the Kickstarter world. The primary challenge that you have, and you may not even know, is the prototyping of your product being ripped off by Chinese manufacturers. In fact, that's one of the biggest problems that's happening right now. A product will be successful on Kickstarter to only have it manufactured and outselling before the Kickstarter even finishes. Now, we're going to be talking about the dynamics of using influencers and maybe a different way to approach this crowdfunding and how you can do it appropriately. That leads me to the next question is, you know, we've talked about working as an investor and working with influencers. Sometimes influencers or guys that are doing a startup, guys, gals, you know, either term, that someone's going to decide to do crowdfunding. Have you guys seen influencers in the crowdfunding world, or have you worked in with anyone that's done crowdfunding? If so, what have you seen as, you know, some of the principles that a person should focus on?
It's very hard to, you know, I think crowdfunding, I think Kickstarter, right? And it's really hard to put the budget necessary with influencers behind something like that, especially when at the company we worked for, you're starting at hundreds of thousands of dollars to engage. So it's most pre-products don't have that type of budget. Now, Kickstarter is getting that way. They're actually, a lot of the best ones are seeded by influencers, very specific influencers, big email lists, stuff like that. But, you know, I haven't seen a ton. However, I've seen some really cool examples of like influencers doing good through crowdfunding. Do you remember United? Was that Turkish Airlines? And what's his face? They raised like so much money for some cause they did a crowdfunding like donation platform. Do you remember this? Like, let's raise $1 million for like refugees.
I do. Oh, Jerome Jarre.
Jerome Jarre did this with all the top.
Ben Stiller.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. Ben Stiller got involved. Yeah. So it was really cool to see influencers come together, use their influence to crowdfund donations for refugees. I thought it was amazing.
Same thing with Hurricane Irma that just came through. Jake Paul.
Oh, they did that.
Yeah, so many influencers stepped in and get huge amounts of donations.
Yeah. So that's, I've seen that really good and you know, really perform. And it's good use of their celebrity and their social influence. They reach a lot of people, bring a lot of awareness to, you know, youth that don't maybe watch the regular news. And so as far as products, though, you know, I haven't really seen that happen as much. Although you could look at something like these pre-launches of things like this flamethrower just the other day that Elon Musk did. And you saw that I read that they sold in the first few hours $5 million worth of this flamethrower. There's no utility for any individual buying this flamethrower.
Oh, so we're not going to do hot dogs?
We're doing hot dogs. Okay. Well, No rational utility. But I mean, marshmallows, it's going to be the most epic roasting marshmallow and hot dog party. But you find that there's the influencers are often just, you know, the masses that, you know, can tweet and create a firestorm and stuff. And data scientists can actually track back who's doing what, but you know, stuff like Elon Musk, he's just, whenever he does anything, it's kind of, he's the influencer, if you will. He has that ability as a tech, you know, a billionaire influencer, Tony Stark figure. I'd love to see more products crowdsourced through influencers. That's actually it could be a whole company doing that, I think. I haven't seen a ton of it other than the donations, unless I'm missing something. Yeah. There's a lot of influencers are busy making a lot of money from big brands, and it would be smart of them to start going into their own products a lot more. And you know, the big ones like Jenner's and stuff, they figured that out. You know, they're making multi-million-dollar brands. Honest Tea Company, Jessica Alba, some of them figured out, but it'd be wise of them to start thinking, what would resonate with my audience the most? And know, someone like Casey Neistat has this decision to make every day. Do I keep making millions of dollars from the brands that I work with, or do I, you know, start to go back and make Beam? You know, he was trying to make an app and kind of used his audience to do that. Well, he got paid a handsome $30 million for that, just for CNN to buy the users. He could do something like that again, you know, and maybe find out, like, I should be designing my own skateboard, or I should be designing my own camera or something. Who knows? Probably better for him to just partner with Canon and make the Casey Neistat, you know, Canon or Sony. I don't even know what he uses, but you know, I'm going there. So it's crowdfunding, like with influencers, it's organically crowdfunding because they already have the crowd. So anything they come up with is essentially crowdfunded because it's like, they can pre-launch anything with how much they can demand from their audience, which is an envious position for someone like me who likes to make products, but doesn't have a crowd to go after. So,
So we'll wrap up with the final question. I'm going to push off to you, Scott. What goes on inside of the head of an angel investor or a person that's making decisions with the fund? So beyond just the, you know, you're there with that meeting, we got that. We've talked there. But like, what's in the day-to-day? Are you constantly searching and hungry and putting your army of people out? Like, hey, if you have friends that have ideas, bring them to me. What is that world? Tell me that.
You know, most large funds, that's how they work. They're trying to source deals. They're hungry for deals. They want to know everybody. I was that way when I started because I thought that's what you had to do. You know, to be honest, I'm pretty depleted. I don't have a lot of angel money left to just go and do that. And it's a lot of work. So I would almost say that my angel investing days are winding down. I'm thirsty and hungry for something that I own and operate again. I've had both my successes with selling companies that I own and operated more or less and not from things I've invested in and stuff. Now, there are people that do that really well out there that have made a lot of great bets and get access to really great deals that are now billion-dollar companies. Being in Salt Lake City, it's just you're not coming across a lot of those. Like, you kind of have to be in the very active spaces like San Francisco or LA and have access to those deals. So my day-to-day now is what can I do here with my limited geography and access to people, money, and ideas. And I feel like there's just a lot of sexiness in some traditional business models, you know, retail and things that aren't, that are, you know, I look and say, what's Amazon not going to kill? And I should probably go after that. And what's maybe a little boring, but could be re-innovated or invented here in Salt Lake. And so those are the things I'm looking at right now. But I'm not trying to source deals anymore because I'm kind of letting the best bubble to the top instead of just kind of taking everything in. A little less noise right now is helpful for me. But I'm very quick to partner if I find the right person. Just the other day, I met an individual who knew how to set up Bitcoin mining and he was a big IT manager and he had server space that he found for $1 square foot. And I'm like, all right, we shook on it 70-30, sent him a bunch of Bitcoin cash and we're off to the races with, you know, miners humming all day long. And it didn't take me a lot to say, like, that's something we should execute on and I should partner on. And there's no holding back. I want to be part of this mining movement, regardless if it makes money right away or not. It's my vote with my dollar to say I want to get behind the cryptocurrency movement. You know, I'm also an owner of the cryptocurrencies, but I felt like without mining, I wasn't doing all of my job. You know, the full buy-in. So I'm quick to execute when I find the right person, the right deal, and the right you know, just kind of the timing has to be right. But I'm more interested in having a lot more ownership right now than I am having little fractions of ownership. I think that I want to go deep on a few things instead of having 25, you know, orphan children that I'm trying to rally or together. I'd rather have, you know, 5 of my own kids or even 3. Like, I actually do have 3 and I have to take care of them. And meanwhile, I have to take care of those 3, which they often, they're actually part of one of my new startups. That's going to be probably my opus is this, new concept that I have coming, which is a mix of Minecraft and climbing gyms. And it'll be coming out here in the next year. And it's going to be something kind of inspired by my own kids. And I'm pretty excited about it. So next time we're on this podcast, I'll be hopefully demoing or talking about that.
Yeah. Well, thanks guys for talking with me today, for going through this. It's pretty cool to hear the perspective of someone that's deep in the trenches with influencers. It's amazing that you haven't become narcissistic. That's cool. I'm not saying that it would always go that way, but dude, it's easy living in LA and being around it. And for you to be around all these other investors, for the audience that's listening or watching, one of the things that Scott Paul has done, and just a little plug, is you've actually brought a lot of people from other communities, other startup world, to Salt Lake. And Scott has this network of people, this group of people, and you're really helping people level up every time. So it's pretty remarkable to be around a part of that. So thanks for being part of this today.
So as we wrap up, you've been able to hear the conversations from Scott and Austin, and hopefully get an insight on to what you can do with your business. And if you think that you have a business that you want to really grow or scale, now you've got more of that formula in your pocket. You know what you should do to create that track record. You know who you should be associating with, and maybe even have a clear idea on what it is that an investor is going to get excited about. Now, if you'd like to follow up with Scott, you can go to his website, which is hyperactivecap.com. You can also reach out to him on LinkedIn, and you can also reach out to Austin. We'll have all that information inside the show notes. But one thing's certain, business is a game. It's a long-term game, and your reputation is important. So the best time to start forming a solid reputation and a track record is now. And if you already have that in place, well, more power to you. And you should put that together in your profile on LinkedIn, and you should start to network with people. There's no shortage of ideas. Absolutely, right now is the best time to move forward and take action on your ideas. Thanks for spending some time with us today on business growth. If you like what you hear, we'd love for you to leave a review and for you to subscribe and share it with your friends. Tell them about this podcast. We're trying to tell stories and give you insights that you're not going to find in other places. You know, premium content for your podcast at no charge. So if you like that, we would love to hear from you. You can also ask me questions directly on Twitter @SpencerShaw. Until next time, thanks for listening.